नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, Text Number 43, Killing of Dhenuka the Ass Demon. Bhidva makunna mukasarakam akshipengais Tapam cha virahajam vrajayo shitokhani Tatsa kiti samadhi gamya vishe viveshagostam Sa virahasa vinayam yadapangamoksham Pitva makunna mukasara gamakshi pengais Tapam chava virahajam rajayoshi tohani Tatsat kitam samadhi gamya vivesha goshtam Sarvigaha Savinayam Yadavanga Moksham Pitva Drinking Mukunda Mukha Of the face of Lord Mukunda Saragam The honey Akshivinkai With there be like eyes Tapam, distress. Chahu, give up. Virahajam, based on separation. Vrajayoshita, the ladies of Vrindavan. Ahani, during the day. Tat, that. Sadgatim, offering of respect. Samadhigamya, Fully accepted. Vivesha, he entered. Goshtam, the covered village. Savrida, with shame. Hasa, laughter. Vinayam, and humbleness. Yat, which, apanga, of their sidelong glances. Moksham, the release. Translation, Disciples of Srila Prabhupada. With their bee-like eyes, the women of Vrindavan drank the honey of the beautiful face of Lord Mukunda, and thus they gave up the distress they had felt during the day because of separation from him. The young Vrindavan ladies cast sidelong glances at the Lord, glances filled with bashfulness, laughter, and submission. And Shri Krishna, completely accepting these glances as a proper offering of respect, entered the cowherd village. Purport. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada describes this incident as follows. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him herding cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna returning, all their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over the honey of the lotus flower. When Krishna entered the village, the young gopis smiled and laughed. Krishna, while playing the flute, enjoyed the beautiful smiling faces of the gopis. The Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, is the supreme master of romantic skills, and thus he expertly exchanged loving feelings with the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan. When a chaste young girl is in love, she glances at her beloved with shyness, jubilation, and submission. When the beloved accepts her offering of love by receiving her glance and is thus satisfied with her, The loving young girl's heart becomes filled with happiness. Thus, these were exactly the romantic exchanges taking place between beautiful young Krishna and the loving cowherd girls of Vrindavan. Mukham karoti bachalam bangam langate girim yakipantamam vande si karoti natavena om gyanati varandasya gyananjana shakaya chakshura militam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So it's very interesting. Here we are in the Pauganda Leela of Krishna, but we're hearing about Madhurya Leela all of a sudden. He's 6 years old, but still he's eternally Kishore, and his age is Kishore. So here he's 6 years old, but even when he was a baby, this happened. The story is coming from Venu Geet of Shivaram Swami, and which he gets from the Acharyas. It may be from Garga Samhita or from the Acharyas. And it's the story of Radha and Krishna when they were small babies. Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, couldn't bear separation from him. So one day he took him out with him to herd the cows. And Krishna, he decided to make the clouds start roaring. There was thunder. There was a lot of thunder in the sky. So Nanda Maharaj was a little bit worried about his baby. There was a darkness came. All the fruit started falling down because the wind came. And so he started praying to Narayan, please protect my baby. And all of a sudden, who appeared there? Srimati Radharani in her Kishori form as a teenager. And he said, oh, please, please, can you take this baby home to his mother? He's very scared over here. He can't stay with me today. She said, okay, I would take him home. And then this was in Bandirban Forest. So what happened next was Krishna changed into Kishore, youth. So here we have Kishore and Kishori together. And Brahma appeared and he said, I want to marry you two, because in the future people will criticize you and your relationship. So Lord Krishna and Radharani went to, he had a pavilion all set up with flags and decorations, and the demigods were there waiting. And Brahma ignited the sacred fire, and they said the mantras, and they circumambulated the fire. And Radhika and Krishna were exchanging garlands, lotus garlands, which were filled with bumblebees. So then they finalized the marriage of Radha and Krishna. That's in Bandirban Forest. You can see over there if you go across. And so then Krishna, all the demigods were making joyful sounds, jai, jai. And playing, they're also playing drums, so that helped with the thundering sound. And then Radha and Krishna began to dance, Rasalila, and the thundering of the drums was keeping in time with their dancing. And they had many, many wonderful foods to eat also. Everything was prepared for a whole marriage ceremony. And then Krishna decorated Radharani with beautiful flowers and decorations. And then Radharani wanted to decorate Krishna, but all of a sudden Krishna changed into a baby again. He said, oh, where have you gone? Well, come back. And then the voice came from the sky, no, very soon you will get all your desires fulfilled. So then Radharani took the baby and went home to and gave the baby to Yashoda, and they both went to sleep in their beds, baby Krishna and baby Radha. And then there was so much thundering that their parents were worried, and they looked to see they were okay, and yes, they were, both the babies were smiling and dreaming about their marriage. So this even in infancy, it's still there. The material rasa is there, and all of a sudden we have it here in this chapter at the end. It's going on already, even though these girls are married. So in the purport, It says that the Supreme Lord Krishna is the supreme master of romantic skills, and thus he expertly exchanged loving feelings with the young cowherd girls of Vrindavan. When a chaste young girl is in love, she glances at her beloved with shyness, jubilation, and submission. When the beloved accepts her offering of love by receiving her glance and is thus satisfied with her, the loving young girl's heart becomes filled with happiness. So this was happening already. Krishna would come home from the forest and from herding the cows, and he would meet all of the devotees. And with the gopis, he would also meet them. And they would exchange so many things on the subtle level. Now this was still Purva Rag. They hadn't really met Krishna yet, but they were already having exchanges. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur asked the question, what did the gopis do when they approached Krishna? So this verse answers the question. They were drinking the honey, saragam. Saragam, the honey of his face. So we get that opportunity here every day. We have the beautiful face of Krishna, and we can drink the honey also. We may not be in Madhurya Ras, but at least we can see the beautiful face of Krishna and all his decorations every day, newer and newer decorations. So Vishnu says they did not just look at Krishna, but they stared at him. They stared at him. I mean, the sidelong glance was also there, and then after the sidelong glance, they were just staring at him. So then Vishwanatha says that, but they were very shy. When Krishna actually saw them, then they were happy. Jubilation, here it says they were in jubilation. So when he met their glance, then they were happy. But then they were very shy, and so they were covering their faces and covering their mouths and everything, like ladies in Braj do sometimes. Some of the ladies, they have their all the way down. I've seen them. And so this shyness came over them. So this is what it says in the purport, shyness, jubilation, and submission. And so then Krishna accepted this as an offering. So we can offer to Krishna flowers, fruits, water, and leaves. And also we can offer him our glance when we come and see him in the temple. We can offer him our glance, and he accepts our glance also. Lord, in the prayers of, no, not in the prayers of Lord Brahma, before the prayers of Lord Brahma, chapter 13, is described the glance of Krishna. It was actually the glance of Vishnu to Brahma. And in the glance, when you get the glance of Krishna, then actually something happens. It's like the mode of passion, similar to the mode of passion, that he creates, the glance of Krishna creates desires in us for devotional service, spiritual desires. Just like in the material world, the glancing, you get material desires. But in the spiritual world, when you get the glance of Krishna, then you get spiritual desires are created. Just like when you chant Hare Krishna, we're praying, please engage me in your service. So then you get spiritual desires there too. So when you get the glance of Krishna, you get spiritual desires. And for the gopis, that meant conjugal, that meant Madhurya Ras. For us, it has different meanings. We may be in the Dasya Ras or Sakya Ras or whatever, parental Ras. But when we get the glance of Krishna, then those desires will be awakened. So another meaning Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives, as Krishna respectfully accepted the gopi's shy glances, satkritim and apangamokam, moksham, which were like bashfully controlled smiles, and to the village, the young women gave up the pain of separation. So Prabhupada mentions that in Krishna book. Even though they're so young, all day they were thinking of Krishna. Just like in Venugit, it says, oh friends, those eyes that see the beautiful faces of the sons of Maharaj Nanda are certainly fortunate. As these two sons enter the forest, surrounded by their friends, driving the cows, they hold their flutes to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. Then this is the best object of vision. So we should take pictures when we, I mean, not with a phone, that's not allowed, but with our eyes, we can come and take pictures every day of the deities and keep them in our heart. And then we can look at those pictures throughout the day and remember what Krishna was wearing, what they were carrying. Sometimes they carry the ropes, Krishna Balaram, they carry the ropes. And the meaning of that, I mean, of course it's for the for herding the cows, but also it's to catch some fortunate soul on their way on that day and bring them back to Godhead. So we can pray like that. Okay, I see a rope. Can you please get me today? I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Very ready. So now the gopis are far away in the village during the day, and they're lamenting in Purvarag, and Purvarag, yes, in separation. A moment seems like hundreds of years. They're thinking, what's the use of our eyes? Now we can't see Krishna. Now we can't see him. We can't get his glance. So now they're all their desires during the whole day, their meditation is fulfilled. They got the glance of Krishna. Finally, we're waiting for that day too. So when Krishna, what do they do? How do the gopis behave in separation? They're an example for us, always thinking of Krishna. So when in Rasleela, Krishna also separated from the gopis. And Srila Prabhupada describes that in Krishna book, when they saw it was getting gradually darker, they stopped going deeper into the forest. They went to the bank of Jamuna, and they were thinking of Krishna, and they began to chant his glories. And what were they chanting? Guess what? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. In Krishna book, Prabhupada says that. That's what the gopis are chanting. Goloka Premadana Hare Nam Sankirtan. The holy name is coming from Goloka, from the mouths of the gopis. So we talked about the glance of Krishna. Now I want to change the topic to the glance of the pure devotee. What's in the glance of the pure devotee? Yes, it has been analyzed by my God brothers and God sisters. So I'd like to share with you what they have found in their research on the glance of Srila Prabhupada. Yesterday I was reading in 10th Canto, 86th chapter. There was a verse that said, one can be gradually purified by visiting the holy places and bathing in the rivers, but one can be immediately purified just by the glance of a pure devotee. There was one boxer in Europe, I can't remember the country, I think it was Germany, or Switzerland. And he was visiting the temple, and then Prabhupada came. And, you know, the devotees were saying to him, why don't you just come and live with us? He said, no, I have to do my boxing. So then Prabhupada came, and he took advantage of Prabhupada's association. And then it was time to go, and Prabhupada got in his car, and somehow he got pushed to the Prabhupada's car, and his face was like smeared against the window because there was so much crowd, and he got the glance of Prabhupada. And then he said, he came back to the okay, I'm joining. And he said, well, what about your boxing? Well, after a glance like that, how can I go back to my boxing? So Prabhupada had that power that he could, through his glance, he could awaken us. The first devotee I'd like to share experience with is Radhanath Swami, who was here in Vrindavan, living in Vrindavan. And he met Prabhupada here, actually. And one day he was walking to his car after giving a lecture, and Maharaj said, I, along with crowds of other people, bowed down to him. When I got up, I saw Srila Prabhupada right in front of me. I was on my knees looking up at Prabhupada, who had a serious, concerned expression and was looking right at me. I felt he was looking into my soul, and it was touched was by Srila Prabhupada's glance. Prabhupada asked, how long have you been here in Vrindavan? And I thought, oh no, all the devotees are chastising me, say I should go out and preach, I shouldn't be in Vrindavan. Now that doesn't happen. But in those days, everybody was preaching to Radhanath.
We still still chastise people.
Well, you do. Okay, all right. The president here says we still chastise people. it's still happening. Okay. So he thought, oh no, all the devotees have been chastising me. Now Prabhupada's going to chastise me. So he was shyly. He said, I've been here about 6 months. So Prabhupada was glancing at him, penetrating him with his glance. Seemed like hours, but maybe it was about 30 seconds. Then his face blossomed into a beautiful, ecstatic smile. He said, very nice. Vrindavan is the most wonderful place. So Maharaj said, after I heard that, that's just what I needed to hear to become attracted to him. Because I felt, now I was ready to go anywhere and do anything. And he left Vrindavan and went to New Vrindavan. And so that's where he went. He went to Maitha Vrindavan in America, and he spent most of the time there, most of his life there, I believe, in New Vrindavan. Now that we heard from Vrindavan, that was a pastime, another pastime from New York. This is from Jadarani, who was one of the first disciples of Prabhupada. She said, if Prabhupada just casually or even quickly looked at us, it had tremendous significance. Like many devotees, I felt he wasn't just seeing me. It was almost embarrassing, but at the same time, it was not embarrassing. Because you know, not only was he seeing beyond the body, he was seeing beyond the faults and beyond the interactions of the modes of nature. He was seeing the soul full of wonderful qualities. It was blissful when he would glance at you. We would hear when Krishna took his lunch with his cowboy boyfriends, everyone think he's looking at me only. So she said, that's how it was with Srila Prabhupada, with many of us. If 10 people were in the room, each had a personal story of the same glance that they got from Prabhupada. Very interesting. Everybody was getting the glance of Prabhupada, and they had a different thing to say. What he was saying, and Prabhupada was... Like, they got conversations with Prabhupada in his glance. They got things that Prabhupada did say. So, from Australia, there's another boxer, and Prabhupada was looking at him. He was a very tough guy, very rough, and he was staring back at Prabhupada, but eventually it got too much and he had to look away from Prabhupada. Sometimes they would try to stare Prabhupada down. I remember there was another one, I can't remember his name. Maybe Naranarayana?
Yes.
Was it Naranarayana? Yeah. So he was staring at Prabhupada, staring. And then he also had to look away. He couldn't tolerate the glance. Now another one was looking at Prabhupada, and because he was trying to test his aura, to see how big his aura was. And when he looked at Prabhupada, he was blinded. He couldn't see anymore. So these are some of the experiences of devotees. Suchinandan Swami tells his story. One incident showed me how a pure devotee can infuse a receptive soul with conviction and spiritual strength. Devotees were going to Oxford Street to chant and distribute magazines. I was standing outside wondering whether I should go with the Sankirtan party or stay back and study Prabhupada's books. I looked up to Prabhupada's room. Suddenly Prabhupada appeared at the window and looked down at the Harinam party. Pleased at the sight, he smiled broadly. Immediately, it was clear to me what to do. So Maharaj, he said, Prabhupada's glance and smile made me so enthusiastic. Even after the party returned, I went back out and we continued to chant and dance through the streets of London. So we felt so inspired by Prabhupada's personal presence, we didn't care for anything else in the world. Just as Lord Chaitanya would give people spiritual energy like by looking at them, Srila Prabhupada would empower his followers. So this is Suchinandan Swami, his story. And there's also another lady from London, Sarvamangala. When Prabhupada glanced at us, we felt he knew us, our spiritual identity, who we actually were. His glance held more than compassion. He saw us as spiritual personalities. And from his glance, we have more of an understanding of our spiritual identity. In Prabhupada's association, we got knowledge of ourselves. His glance informed us we weren't this body, and it brought us into the spiritual world, because Prabhupada brings the living entity into the spiritual world. He brings the spiritual world with him. So it wasn't just sentimental. Every time we saw him, we experienced these transcendental truths. And here's her last time I saw Prabhupada in 1977, he looked at me, and his glance, he gave me love and affection, and communicated, "I'm yours, you're mine, and I'm bringing you to Krishna." I could see he had been there for me for many lifetimes, and he was saying, "Please come back to Krishna." It was like a glimpse of the spiritual world. So there we have the topic of the glance. We can go on much more. In Krishna's glance, there's so many things. There's creation, there's destruction, and there's maintenance in Krishna's glance. Today is the disappearance day of Jagannath Das Babaji. So I'll say a few words about him. He lived for 144 years. They used to carry him in a basket because he really couldn't walk. He would live 6 months in Navadvip and 6 months in Vrindavan. He had a Bihari, he had his Brijavasi servant, would carry him on his shoulders in a basket. He would just sit in a little basket and carry him. But whenever there was Nam Kirtan, he would jump out of the basket and leap and dance in Kirtan. One time, he begged a roti from a bangi in Vrindavan, a street sweeper. And so the people came to protest. "How can you do this? And now people are speaking bad about you. You took a roti from a bangi. You're not supposed to do that." They say Baba's gone mad. He's defying the age-old traditions. And Maharaj replied, "You are all learned people. Don't you know the importance of the dust of Vrindavan? It is so surcharged with Krishna Prem, even Lord Brahma desires to become a particle of Rajaraj. Isn't a Vrindavan sweeper constantly serving the dust, breathing it, rolling in it, and bathing in it more pure than anyone else?" So, silence filled the air, indicating everyone accepted what he said. So he was revolutionary. All of them were revolutionary. Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, everybody. Now, it's also the disappearance day of Rasikananda, disciple of Shama Nanda. He was in the first book distribution party, taking all the books, a whole bullock cart of books, from Vrindavan to Orissa, to Bengal. And he was delivering everybody, from pious royal families, kings, to Muslims, to Brahmins, to outcasts, to atheists, and even wild animals. One time some mad elephants attacked him, and calmly he chanted, "Gauranga, Gauranga, Krishna, Krishna," and was sprinkling water on the mad elephants. They immediately stopped charging and humbly bowed their heads and raised their trunks and bellowed, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." Not the whole mantra, just a couple of them. Another time, there was a Muslim king who was against Rasikananda, and he sent a mad elephant to charge, and he calmed this elephant and he initiated him. He whispered in his ear, "Your name is Gopal." So this elephant did service later on for devotees. He would bring food to the devotees and in the forest, who were living in the forest. So he got an elephant disciple. So how did he leave his body? They were having kirtan and with mridanga and kartos, very powerful kirtan, and he left his world by entering into the Kirchor Gopinath Deity in Raimuna. He entered into the deity. And devastated in separation, his disciples dropped their mrijangas, their kartals, and their bodies. They also left their bodies. So, powerful incident with Rasikananda. Now, the last one's disappearance day is Tamal Krishna Maharaj today, our Tamal. So he was a pioneer in America and L.A., a pioneer in India. He was a pioneer in the Radha Damodar Party, distributing books in USA. And finally, he was a pioneer in China. So in the letter, when he was in L.A., Prabhupada said, the L.A. Center is now especially meant for training devotees and dispatching them in different centers and wherever they are required. So open correspondence with Tamal Krishna, and I also tell him to assist you as far as possible. So right from the beginning, I mean, he was probably a devotee for one year or 2 years, and he was already a leader. In his sannyasa initiation, Prabhupada said, anyone who has taken birth as a human being in the land of Bharatvarsha, janma sarta kodikoro, pura upakar. It's a duty. So Prabhupada said, it was the duty of the Indians to take this up. But he said, but they are packed up in a limited space. I mean, that's why they didn't follow, he said. I'm so much obliged to you that you American boys are taking sannyasa and preaching the cult of Lord Chaitanya all over the world. Thank you very much. We'll stop there if anybody has questions or comments. Of course. What would be a class without Panchagoda's question?
It says that Gopi was giving sidelong glances and smiling at Krishna. Krishna had so many beautiful queens that were all trying to get his attention. But it seems that Krishna is self-satisfied, although he appreciates the smiling glances why is it that we're being part of parcel of Krishna? Why do we need to be satisfied by external objects or on a spiritual or material level where Krishna is fully self-satisfied all the time?
Why do we need to be satisfied?
Krishna is fully self-satisfied. Yeah. Why can't we just be self-satisfied also?
Well, we can. If we connect with Krishna, because he's self-satisfied, if we connect, then we'll also be self-satisfied. If we make the connection, now we're kind of disjointed, we're disconnected. And that's why we're not self-satisfied. We're trying to make the connection with the things of this world. And they won't help, they won't make us satisfied, because they'll disappear, or we will disappear, one or the other. They go from us, or we go from them. But Krishna is always there.
Well, in Satyabhama was saying that, okay, you bring me a flower, show me your love, because I did it anyway. So does he feel obliged to satisfy his devotees?
He does feel obliged to satisfy his devotees. And that was his relationship with Satyabhama. It was like always fighting together. That was his happiness. And she would challenge him, and he would meet the challenge. And so she challenged him, I want a whole tree. You give a flower to Rukmini, now I want a tree. If you don't give me a tree, then I don't know what would have happened. But
Handpecked,
yes. But he was not really handpecked, but he was obliged to the devotion of his devotees.
Can you explain
handpecked?
Handpecked?
Oh, handpecked means... that like the husband does whatever the wife says and he cannot, he has no independence. I think that's normal. I could tell a story about that with Birbal and Akbar. One time Birbal was late for the court and Akbar said, why are you late? And Birbal said, well, my wife, you know, I had to do something for my wife, and it was immediate, I couldn't leave. He said, you listen to your wife, Akbar said? He said, of course, everyone listens to their wife. He said, okay, prove it. He said, all right, call all the men here to the court, to the village, to your window. So all the men of the city came, and Birbal said, okay, whoever listens to your wife, go on this side. There was a stampede. Everyone went on that side except for one man. And Akbar said, "You are very brave. How come you didn't go on that side?" He said, "Because my wife told me to avoid crowds." So Birbal proved it. Anyway, okay, what is your question, Maharaj?
You quoted Vishnu
Chakravarti. Right, Sarita Darshini.
And you said that Brahma did not marry him.
Yes.
So nobody would criticize.
Yes, so nobody would. That's what he says, yes.
So then it says that married gopis.
Yeah.
In a side long glance.
Yeah, they were married, yes.
Now, are they actually married or apparently married?
Apparently married. Actually, well, I mean, if you look deep into the Acharya's commentaries, for one thing, the year that they got married was the year that Brahma stole all the cowherd boys and calves. So who did they marry? Krishna. That's one thing. And then it goes on, there's a whole, you read the end of Gopal Champu by Jiva Goswami, and he has a huge lot of stories about that, where they weren't actually married.
So one story.
One story. You want that? That's huge.
Not just
one story. No, it's altogether one story. I mean, it's a big, it's like two chapters.
Summarize.
Yeah, according to Jiva Goswami, so first of all, they married Krishna, and second of all, Yogamaya made duplicate copies of all the gopis, and they lived with the husbands, and the other gopis were not there. They were not living with their husbands, but it appeared as if they were. They made duplicates, and then later on, Krishna had a huge marriage ceremony and married all of the gopis, all of those gopis. That's a summary of it.
And the Abhimanyu factor?
Yeah, he's in an expansion of Krishna.
How?
I don't know. That I can't answer. How he's an expansion. But it is said by the Acharyas that he is an expansion of Krishna. How he is, that would be hard to say. Any other questions? We finish early. Okay, Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.